for the independent mind.
Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor LeCain. Today we're talking about healing trauma through laughter. I recently met Clowns Without Borders, a group whose mission is resilience in laughter. They perform in conflict zones, refugee camps, and places of crisis, helping people heal through laughter. Here with us today are three members of Clowns Without Borders, Executive Director Naomi Schaefer, and two board members, Aaron Curtis and Saida Trayul, all clowns. Naomi Schaefer has been clowning since she was 12. She started volunteering with Clowns Without Borders in 2015 and has performed with them in Haiti, Myanmar, and throughout the United States. She has an MBA in conscious business from Marlboro College. Our second clown guest is Erin Lee Crites, an international theater artist, educator, and purveyor of make-believe. In the past 10 years, she has traveled extensively to explore the global community and create bonds through theatrical play. Erin splits her time between Los Angeles and Idlewild as an ensemble member of Fiasco Physical Theater and a full-time instructor in the theater department at the International Idlewild Arts Academy. She joined Clowns Without Borders in 2010 after receiving her MFA in physically based ensemble theater from Del Arte International. Erin has performed with Clowns Without Borders USA in Colombia, Kenya, and Nicaragua. Saida Trujillo, our third guest, was born in Montreal and grew up in Canada, Guatemala, and the USA. She's a theater artist specializing in voice and movement. Her training combines a BFA in acting from the California Institute of the Arts, a postgraduate certificate in physical theater from Del Arte International School of Physical Theater, and a master's in voice studies from the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama in London. Saida is a full-time faculty at Del Arte International. She has performed with Clowns Without Borders in Guatemala, Mexico, and Palestine. So I'm thrilled to have all three of you here, Naomi Schaefer, Erin Crites, and Saida Trujillo. Welcome to All Together Now.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Are you all here?
Yes,
thank you for having us.
This is exciting, and I just want to say one of the things I'm most looking forward to is you actually performing some clowning on the air, which I'll be amazed to see how you can do a clown performance on the air, but I want our guests to know that's coming, so hang in there, and we'll get to that soon. But let's get a little background first. So, Naomi, what is Clowns Without Borders for our listeners who might not have heard of it?
Of course, Clowns Without Borders is a small nonprofit, and we are professional clowns and circus artists who perform all around the world in refugee camps, conflict zones, and sites of natural disaster.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a real good service. And how long has Clowns Without Borders been around? When did you all start?
Clowns Without Borders has been around since 1995, and so we've been doing this a while, and over the past 5 years, the organization has grown a lot. For the first 20 years, we were entirely volunteer-run, and now we have a staff and more regular programming. But, you know, we hope that there's a day when there are not so many people displaced in the world, but as long as there are people displaced in the world, we want to make sure that they are also experiencing the right to laughter.
Right, exactly. I love that. And unfortunately, I think, you know, refugees and displaced people are a growth area. If nothing else, with this climate crisis we've got, people are having to move because of the mudslides, the fires, the earthquakes, and all of that. So I think this is a major issue for the country and the world to be grappling with. But I love your approach about the right to laughter. So, Aaron, can you describe a little bit what happens at a Clowns Without Borders performance?
Sure. Usually we will have four clowns on a tour or trip, and depending on where they are, the format could go something like this. They show up to the site where the performance is going to happen, and a lot of times there will be a kind of parade or some music playing or a little bit of traveling and kind of one-on-one interaction with the clowns and the community to kind of mobilize or let it be known that a show is coming or is going to start, and to kind of start to rally a group. And the performances themselves, depending on where we are and who we're partnering with, the messaging or the creation of content will sometimes be specific to cater to the needs of our NGO partners, our local partners, and or a combination of routines, stock routines that Clowns Without Borders has had in their repertoire for the 20 plus years, and or individual routines that the professional clowns themselves have been working on over time. But usually, yeah, there will be a parade or some music playing or one-on-one, and then the creation of the crowd, and then the performance itself. It will gain more and more people as it goes on, and what could start as a smaller crowd could end, you know, with over 1,000. Who knows? It changes every time depending on which place we are, what the community is like, and what the travel path is like, whether we're performing in a school that knows that we're coming and has, you know, given us a particular time to perform, or we're along the Balkan route and it is a lot of like interaction and changes on the fly because there isn't actually a dedicated performance space or an actual time, and that's being decided day of amongst the clowns themselves.
Right. Yeah, I would imagine there's a fair amount of spontaneity in your line of work, which is part of the fun.
Oh, sure. We like to call it rigid flexibility. We know the rules, but we need to be able to modify on the fly.
Yeah, that sounds great. And do your shows have some kind of theme? I guess, you know, any of you could answer this, but is there a theme to your shows? Do they have kind of a message to them, or is it really just anything that kind of will provoke laughter and joy?
This is Naomi, and so I'll answer, and that often depends. So usually the message that's in all of our shows is that we're here no matter where we are in the world, who we are in the world, we have the right to come together in community and celebrate. And in terms of messaging, that it depends really on the local audience. And so we always work with a project partner. We say we go where we're invited. So rather than me sitting and saying, oh, I think we should go there, I spend a lot of time connecting with communities and organizations around the world to make sure that the audience wants us, because very often they haven't chosen to be in a refugee camp or in a state of crisis. And so the message of the show really depends on the audience. We last year did work with the Minds Advisory Group and actually made a clown show with part of their education program around landmine safety. We've done shows that are purely about the joy of life, Right now, there's a group of clowns in Ecuador. We're finishing up a tour that's all about the integration and celebration of Venezuelan culture and Ecuadorian culture, because our audience are Venezuelan refugees who are now living in Ecuador.
Oh, that's exciting. And, you know, I've spent a lot of time in Ecuador. Where in Ecuador are you performing, or do you kind of travel around the country?
They've been traveling around. Right now they're in Quito. We were going to be in Tulcan today and tomorrow, but the car broke down, and so we've done some adapting and are now doing more days in Quito.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I really appreciate you getting out there and doing that, and I know a lot of people, when they think about people who are displaced or in refugee camps and all of that, you know, it seems kind of grim, and when people think about helping out, they're thinking more along the lines of humanitarian aid, medical care, food. So how do you fit into that, you know, Naomi, and how do clowns fit into this whole concept of humanitarian aid?
Well, we never come first. Of course, water, food, medicine, housing always comes first. But one of the pieces that's important is hope and the fullness of expression. And actually, last year, Saida was on a tour in Guatemala where 3 days after the eruption of Volcán de Fuego, we got a call inviting us to come and perform, because that community who invited us, you know, already knew that no matter what the response was of medicine and aid and blankets, there was still going to be the need for community healing. And we think of that we operate on the UN's Declaration of the Rights of the Child, and the right to play is part of the right to education. Children learn by play. We all learn by play and experiencing all of our emotions. And one of our project partners said, before the clowns came, the children played war. And after the clowns came, the children played clown. And that for us is part of why it's so important to make sure that even for people whose whole lives might be focused in this moment on survival, on the scarcity, or the trauma that they're going through, there also needs to be room for laughter, which is renewable. There can be enough. There may never be enough visas or enough medicine or enough shelter to replace what is lost, but if we can laugh together, then that's something that there can be enough of.
Absolutely, and you've mentioned the right to play as part of the right to education. Is that like really a thing? Like, does the Universal Declaration of Human Rights say there's a right to play for people?
They really do. It's in the UN's Declaration of the Rights of the Child, and it's part of the right to education. And then the Declaration of Human Rights is also includes the right to culture, and laughter is a piece of that.
Interesting. Well, Saida, Naomi is just saying that you arrived 3 days after a disaster, and I can only imagine the scene there. You arrive and there's probably still food and medicine and blankets and different things arriving for the people who have been displaced and traumatized. Can you describe kind of where you were and what your experience was when you arrived on site after that disaster?
Yes, and let me just clarify that they reached out to us 3 days after, and that's when we started to plan our you know, our trip to go and collaborate with the communities there. So this happened in June, and we were able to arrange for everything to be there in August. And so it took 2 months, but we a few chapters from USA came together. It was a clown from Canada and two of us from the U.S. and a clown from Guatemala, as well as a community leader from Guatemala. And so when we arrived, the communities were already in staying at schools and that were serving as camps, temporary camps, because their homes had been affected. And so we moved from in different communities and visited the areas where complete families were sharing, you know, they were staying in school gyms and churches and camps that had been built specially for temporary camps for them. So it was really amazing because we have a long relationship. My first trip to Guatemala was in 2005 after Hurricane Stan. My parents are Guatemalan, and I lived in Guatemala when I was little. So I've had the opportunity to be able to go back there for work as well as to visit family. And so being able to go back to a community that really trusts Clowns Without Borders and values and sees the importance of laughter and hope and as part of an integral part of healing just makes everything better, you know, because we can get to work. And this time a group of community leaders had gotten together and requested that we provide training for them so that they could laugh, because they realized that their work, these were social workers and teachers, and said, you know, we want to laugh too. So we did a week of trainings for a group of community leaders. And then followed up with that about a year later, the founder, Moshe Cohen, ended up going back and doing specifically just training for community leaders. So
that's great.
Well, yeah.
What a wonderful description of the power of your wonderful work. And really, I guess all healing comes from the heart at some level. And it's great to see the incredible work you're doing all over the world. So are there other Clowns Without Borders? Or, Naomi, do you know, are there other groups? Or is this like a U.S.-based thing? Or do you now have chapters around the world? How does that work?
There are 14 chapters of Clowns Without Borders around the world. So it was originally started in Spain and then brought to the U.S. And so right now there are 14 of us, and we all operate independently. So Clowns Without Borders USA is its own 501c3 nonprofit. Payasos Sin Fronteras in Spain is its own NGO. Clowns Utan Granser in Sweden is its own NGO. But we all work in collaboration, and at the heart of our work is the spirit of collaboration, wanting to make sure that we're reaching as many people as possible. And so that sometimes looks like a sharing of contacts, really thinking about how can we be reaching the greatest number of people possible. And then also we share a code of ethics. We share a lot of resources about how to do the work. And there is also Clowns Without Borders International, which is an NGO that joins all of the chapters of Clowns Without Borders together so that we can be lifting each other up, mentoring each other, and sharing laughter in as many places as possible.
That's great. And do you have partnerships, say, with the Doctors Without Borders or other groups that are responding to people in crisis?
So we are not in any way officially connected to Doctors Without Borders. It's just, you know, they have such a great name that it shares exactly what they're doing, and that's where our name came from. But we do partner with different organizations and have actually worked with Doctors Without Borders. Two years ago, I was in Haiti with Doctors Without Borders. We were performing in their hospitals, and we've also, right now, we're working with Jesuit Refugee Services in Ecuador. We've worked with UNHCR Kenya. We have a number of different sort of these big name organizations that you might recognize, and we also work with grassroots community groups. So our partner in the Bahamas is actually a group of neighbors who came together, some who had lost their homes in Dorian and some who hadn't, and they together said, we'd like the clowns to come. And so we adapt to make sure that to try to get our programming wherever we can.
Yeah, that sounds terrific. And I watched a great video that showed you the Clowns Without Borders showing up somewhere and then doing the parade and people joining in. And it really struck me that it's not just for children, that, you know, the children seem to resonate first and they got it right away. It's like, oh, this is fun, let's do this. Mm-hmm. And the parents might be a little more careful or guarded, but then eventually they kind of got into the spirit of it. But Erin, what would you say, like, who is affected by the performance you do? Is it really for kids, or do you notice that really it's all the kids at heart and the adults too?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there is a lot in our culture in the United States about clowns and, you know, kids' birthday parties or such, but I think some of the greatest power in what we do is, like, connecting to the clown in everybody, regardless of age, like that notion of play and community and seeing and being seen, like, from that perspective. And and I think it's really just a matter of who's available to play first, and that there are, you know, you can make kind of generalizations about that, that the younger kids are maybe more available or open immediately to this idea of playing, or, you know, as I specifically, like, moving, am looking for permission, right, in the eye contact or in the smile, to see who's available for playing and to see the kind of ripples from there. So in a crowd, you know, it might be the six-year-old that just comes up, runs up immediately to start, you know, tugging on clothes or checking in with the instrument that I have, and that will be the first connection. But that connection kind of allows the other people at different ages or at, you know, different experiences or holding on to a different kind of perspective that might be skeptical of us being there, which is totally understandable, that it allows that that framework to kind of melt a little bit. And I feel like the longer we get into the show and the more, say, the younger ones, you know, come on board with what's happening, it just kind of, yeah, it ends up enveloping everybody, including, you know, the potential armed guards who are a part of it, or, you know, our team.
You mean like the military police?
I'm sorry?
You mean like the military or the police that are around kind of get into it too?
Well, this is very specific for certain tours, but I know the first time, I've only been to Haiti with Clowns Without Borders once, and I went in 2010, and there was a particular show in one of the camps that, was being patrolled by military, and so that was one of those moments where I see, like, the power of clown to be, you know, kind of a bridge between any walk. It doesn't matter the person, mm-hmm. or the relationship or the potential power dynamic that might be in the space or in the environment, but the clown kind of, yeah, bridges and walks through those places and allows connections to exist. So, or like, and that's through play. That's if the person, adult or child, wants to come on board with that idea of being playful.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to ask all of you, starting with Saida, what do you see as the impact of your performances on the people who are watching you? I would imagine you're kind of clued in to what kind of response you're getting when you kind of, you show up, you're dressed as clowns, you're making music, parading through, and kind of creating a sensation. What are you seeing, or what are they telling you about the impact of your performances on the people who get to see you? Saida, why don't you start?
Great. It's just magical. As you were asking the question, I'm remembering just the feeling of encountering a community, and you are seeing their, you know, they're shy, but they're enjoying laughing as if like they're giving themselves permission to laugh again. And then at the end of the show, people come to us and it's like they know us, you know, so we skip over so many formalities, it feels like. So by the end of the show, people are hugging us and they're telling us more of their stories, and they want us to come to their house sometimes and eat with them. So there is a sense of real connection, and that they identify, because as Naomi mentioned earlier, the themes of the show are really just about being human and about the right to enjoy, to laugh. And so it's such a wonderful experience.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And Aaron, what's your experience of what people take away from your performances?
Yeah, Saida really, really did it. I agree mm-hmm. wholeheartedly. There is a metaphor that I come back to that is about buoyancy, like this idea of a balloon being pushed underwater, and that moment that the pressure lets go and it pops back up again. Like it's that, but it's like in the energy of the environment. So it's almost as if like laughter itself has allowed, some kind of pressure in the environment to kind of alleviate or relieve itself a bit. And that's felt in like the bubbling of the energy after the show is over, in that moment where we usually get rushed by the crowd, or like have moments where, there's a continued want to connect in more micro moments or one-on-one moments when the show is over from everybody. So it's not a learning per se. It's like a relearning, or like an opening up, or a remembering of what's already in there that might have, you know, been lost for a moment or had been taken away even. It's that magic. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Well, that sounds great. And Naomi, how about for you? You've been doing this for years now. How do you see the impact of your performances?
For me, the greatest impact is when the energy actually shifts away from the clowns. So often when we start, we arrive in a refugee camp or in a town square, a place that's not set up to be a performance space. And the first thing we do is with this parade is announce our presence and invite people to come in to the show. And at first, the energy is all on the clowns. Everyone's watching the clowns and reacting to the performance. But there's a really wonderful turning point that happens. And maybe there's a moment where we ask an audience volunteer to come up, and it's this little kid who comes up, and all of a sudden they become the focus. They reclaim the focus of the group. Or there's a moment where, you know, somebody in the audience will laugh at a moment when no one else is laughing, and boom, everyone's heads turn, and all of a sudden everyone is focusing on this new person. And at the end of the show, we almost always end our show in a song or a dance or something that can be shared with everyone. And for me, the best thing that happens at the end of a show is when audience members turn to each other and start to play. Or if we return an hour later and aren't in costume anymore, we see that the children are still singing our songs, or they're actually reacting out the whole show. We
had a moment of going back a year after being at this one town, and the kid sat us down and showed us scenes that we had done the year before. And to me, that's the greatest impact, is when a community member or a whole community kind of reclaims and redefines how they want to celebrate and what type of performance they want to create for each other.
Oh, that's really beautiful. And I'm wondering, you're talking about going to a number of different countries, and some of them you may speak the language, some of them you're not. How do you communicate with the audience given the potential language differences? Are you speaking, or is it all miming and action? Or, Erin, how would you address that in terms of the language difference and closing that gap?
I think that's one of the beautiful gifts about physical theater, or clown specifically, is that it does not have to be language-based. And so I'd say for most of the shows, or at least the tours that I've participated in, we've used little, if any, language. And when we do, it's often learning particular phrases in the local language so that we can do an introduction or maybe sing a song in the local language, so that we can highlight both our want to share in the culture, the experience of the people that we are performing for or supporting. And then also there's it's kind of in the style that Commedia dell'arte did this in way back when, another form, an improvised theatrical form, where the traveling so often and knowing that you wouldn't know the local language, it was a matter of like making sure that you hit the jokes or like got the couple of really important things in the local dialect, and then the rest would be performed in a dialect-based gibberish or gramolo. So we have a lot of kind of sound effects, or like using your voice, like the pitch and the tone, to create sound or expression, and then a lot of pantomime, and then singing. But then highlighted little moments or introductions or highlights in the show, benchmarks potentially, that will be translated into the local language with help from our local partners.
Mm. And Naomi, what about the cultural sensitivity thing? Is there any concern about, you know, the stuff that we do as clowning in the U.S. that I've seen in circuses and so forth? Does that translate? Is that like universally funny, or do you have to kind of adapt based on the culture you're in?
Well, the clowning that you've seen in the circus is or may be pretty different from the type of clowning that we're doing. In part that, you know, if you've been to a big circus show, you've probably seen clowns in really colorful wigs and exaggerated costumes, and maybe with their whole faces painted. And we often look like, more like ourselves. A lot of the clowns we work with maybe wear a red nose and a hat, accentuate some features, but we're not in that kind of Ringling, Barnum & Bailey circus world. And in terms of sensitivities, our shows, we never... we're never making jokes about race or ability or using sexuality or alcohol. We're not using verbal humor also. But really what we're playing with is power dynamics and relationships. And that's kind of the beauty of the clown. If you think about kind of the archetype of the clown as being the court jester next to the king, and kind of being the person who creates a lot of fun, but maybe also is the truth teller. And so within our troupe, we're able to tell a lot of stories without language. And in terms of cultural sensitivity, we do spend a lot of time with our partners, making sure we understand kind of what is the social context of where we're performing. There are certain areas where something like slapstick or physical comedy, where, let's say, I pull Sida's chair out from under her, is really funny. And there, we have some audiences for whom any kind of violence, even theatrical play violence, is not appropriate. So we spend a lot of time figuring that out. And well, I guess I would say that farts are kind of universally funny.
Right. Well, I would guess there's a number of things, like scorch to the face. I can't imagine anyone not kind of laughing about that.
Yeah.
But I love what you're saying about being the court jester next to the king. That was always my favorite part in Shakespeare, was the clown, the jester, was kind of the comedian, but also had a cutting edge there about, I'm the truth teller, and I can be in front of the king saying things that someone else might be executed for, but the clown could do it in front of the king and make his message known, but not be executed. So I love that element of truth telling there. So I know the three of you are wonderful people and incredibly dedicated, and I know you're not in this to make millions of dollars, because, you know, there's not millions of dollars to be made. Hopefully you're getting some kind of compensation for the great work you're doing. But I'm wondering, for each of you, what is the attraction to being a clown without border? Like, what drew you in, and then what kept you there and keeps you going back? And Sida, let's start with you.
What a great question. I'm having to think about it. It's amazing what comes up as you were asking that. I've been doing theater now for over 25 years, and physical theater was part of my training. And I am now dedicated, I think, a super fan of Clowns Without Borders, and I will be forever. And I think it has to do with, as I look at my life and think of my parents having to leave a country due to war, and I've been just examining through this work what makes people leave their homes. And so this notion of borders, and it's very personal to me. So in this way, it's a way to really keep active and keep hopeful that that borders are not always, they're not useful, you know. And so for me, it's very personal. And the more now that I serve on the board, I still go if I have to, when I can fit it into my schedule and go in the field and go on a trip. But serving on the board is really has become more about looking at the whole picture and the impact that this work has, because that's the impact that it has had in my own life. In my relationship to borders is very it's strong. Yeah, I've crossed a few to be where
right.
I am.
Exactly. And Aaron, how about you? What attracted you into the Clowns Without Borders, and why do you stay?
For me, it's also very personal. I remember so clearly the first time I laughed after a dear friend had died, and it was listening to the radio, to something I'd already heard, which is, maybe not the funniest thing ever, but that moment of laughing, and it felt both so good to laugh, and it was this moment of kind of everything at once, of laughing and feeling for the first time, oh, I'm going to be okay, and then also laughing and having that moment of, through the laughter, understanding my grief more, that this was my new normal. And that's one of the pieces that keeps me dedicated to the work, is that the invitation to laugh isn't always the same as an invitation to happiness, or this invitation of everything's going to be all right. It's this opening opening to a next chapter and acknowledging the whole self and the whole human experience. So that's why I keep doing this.
Wow. And Naomi, how about you? You're the leader of the board here, the executive director. Why do you dedicate so much of your life to doing the clowning?
Oh, sorry. I was Naomi.
Naomi. Oh, Erin, no,
so
Kevin, your
turn.
Erin, you're up. What brought you in and what keeps you there?
I grew up with a pretty strong concern for the world. I don't know how to put it differently. A pretty nervous and sensitive kid, and there was a big part of me that knew that service work or something of that world was going to be part of my life, and then it became more personal after I was introduced to the organization through a really electric night of conversation with somebody I had never met before, but that really changed everything. One of those conversations, and then it became critical for me to try and join or go on a trip when the person that told me about the organization passed, and it became like a second ringing of the bells, like, no, I definitely need to go do this. And then, after that first experience in Haiti, I recognized or felt like that it wasn't that I gained as much or more from the audience as I was giving, and that the service work was not, it just had a, it changed radically my definition of what that meant and how to be of service in this world. And I think that specifically that our mission and this notion of everyone's right to laughter is both a, like what we do is both a reactive healing, but for me it's also a proactive healing. And that's maybe why it's this particular kind of work that I keep attaching to, because I feel like if all of us were playing more of the time all over the planet in the spirit that I find on the playground of clown, that we wouldn't be as necessary as an organization, or we wouldn't be reacting to these situations when they're man-made, that is, right? When they're mm-hmm. people-made situations as opposed to nature-made. But it's the notion that laughter is a basic human right, and not only that, it's a rejuvenative and restorative practice or art or release or expression, and that is maybe the greatest service is to remember for myself to keep playing even when the world seems really upside down, scary, or sad, that play and laughter are keys.
Right.
Moving forward.
And, right.
Or
not only even when the world is scary and upside down, but especially when the world is scary and upside down, we need to remember the joy of laughter and the joy of play. You know, I was thinking when you talked about how to be of service and learning that through the clown service. It reminds me, we have adopted a couple of pets over the years, and they're rescue animals. And I love that expression, we rescue them and they rescue us. Mm. You know, we rescue the animals. Say, oh, this kitten or puppy doesn't have a home. We have a home. We can share our home with the pet. And then you realize the pet is very loving and affectionate and becomes a member of the family, and it's like they rescue you with their devotion and affection. So service, to me, is just kind of where it's all about. And I've met a lot of people who have made a lot of money in the world, and they're still not happy because money alone doesn't bring happiness. And I'm thinking, Saito, of your comment that you grew up partly in Guatemala, and your family, I think your family immigrated to the United States. And when we spoke last week, you were sharing about how your family was kind of wondering about your choice to be clowning and doing that form of service instead of something that might bring in a greater financial prosperity. But can you talk a little bit about kind of your experience of this life devoted to service as opposed to looking for more money or the, you know, the prosperity side of the American dream?
Yes, I am examining that still. I'm 43 years old, and for so long I've carried a kind of shame around, you know, what a disappointment it must have been for my mother who worked so hard, and that exactly that the expectation as the child of immigrants is that you will get a job, that you would just make money, and that making it means owning things and having things. And here I've become a theater maker, and it's taken a long time, but I think my family does value now, and they see that. And for me, I feel really privileged that it's a radical choice, and I honor the hard work that my family does to live here, and what they've, because it's because of them that I can do this. But I feel so. I think I'm going to have work my whole life, and that makes me happy. That I don't think I'll be done, and that's how I want to live my life. I want to be able to not have completed everything before I die. You know, I think I just want to be busy learning and meeting. It's the biggest education is to meet people in the world, and you find that we're not different, but we are. And so I don't know if that answers your question, but that's where I am. That's what it's done for me.
No, that's great. I think it's wonderful that you found something that makes you happy, and that what's making you happy is helping to make other people happy, particularly people who don't have much. So good for you. I really admire you following that. I'm curious, Naomi, how many performances do Clowns Without Borders do each year, and how many people do you reach in a year?
So it varies year to year. In 2018, we did just over 200 performances and reached 48,000 people. We're just finishing up two tours right now. So we've done this year in 2019, 12 tours, and again around 200 performances. We've actually had smaller audiences this year, and that was partially by choice. We decided that we wanted to really focus on reaching audiences who weren't being reached otherwise. So this year, instead of going to some of the larger refugee camps, we went to refugee camps where there were maybe only 30 people staying. And so, you know, what we count as one performance is actually a sort of, yes, one performance and then 6 hours of engaging with a group of people who then told us, you know, they had really felt forgotten, that they're off the track, and more there are people who are displaced who will continue to be displaced for decades, and a shift of from some of the much larger refugee camps to camps that are quite small, and and so that's this year.
Right. Well, now you've all gotten me very curious about what your performances actually entail. So I'm hoping I can invite you to share a little bit of kind of, I don't know how you do this on the radio, given that you usually are, you know, it's such a nonverbal experience with a clown, but is there something you could do for our listeners here now that would give a sample of the kind of work and performance you do in Clowns Without Borders?
Well, we could do a song, and I'm actually going to ask Saida to lead this, and I have
I have a couple of shakers here in my bag. I wouldn't, you know, wouldn't be an adult in the world if I didn't travel around with some music makers at all times. And I'm going to invite Saida to start us off.
This is a song that I usually sing with and adapt to different situations when I go on trips.
De la Sierra Morena, cielito lindo, vienen bajando un par de ojitos negros, cielito lindo, de contrabando. Ay, 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 canta y no llores, porque cantando se alegra, cielito lindo, los corazones. Ay, 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 canta y no llores, porque cantando se alegra, cielito lindo, los corazones.
Wow, that's really great. I really appreciate that. I'm wondering if you folks could come and do the clown performances that are here in Washington, D.C. at the U.S. Congress. I think people all there kind of need to lighten up and to laugh and to kind of bond together. Have you ever been to D.C.?
We've done a benefit show in D.C., and if we were invited, our part of our work is, you know, if a community reaches out and says, you know, we believe we're experiencing a crisis or healing from a trauma and would like the clowns to come, we try to say yes whenever possible.
Oh, fantastic. Well, listeners, hope you're paying attention to that. And if you are in or know of a community that needs healing, we want you to get in touch with the Clowns Without Borders. And how can people get in touch with you for that?
Well, our website is clownswithoutborders.org. And we're also on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter as Clowns Without Borders. And through any of those channels, you can message us, email us, and then also our email is info@clownswithoutborders.org.
Well, that's fantastic. And how are you guys funded? I would think the refugee camps can't really, they don't have any money to give you. And, you know, what's your annual budget and how do you fund your great work?
Our annual budget is about $130,000 a year. And that's not including the incredible in-kind donations of a lot of our project partners who provide us with transportation or a place to stay once we've arrived. And also our incredible artists donate their time when they're on tour with us. And that's largely through individual donors. The backbone of Clowns Without Borders are our monthly donors who give anywhere from $10 to $100 a month. And, you know, we sort of say it's like subscribing to Netflix, but rather than your own entertainment, you're providing entertainment for someone else.
I love that because that's what we do with Netflix, right? $10 a month. And what a joy to share joy with other people, particularly this time of year around the holidays. But that sounds great. Well, we're almost at time. Before we sign off, I just wanted to ask each of you to very briefly say what you have learned from working with Clowns Without Borders. And Erin, why don't we start with you?
Ooh, what I have learned. That is a long list. Maybe most importantly, that play is more powerful in more arenas than anyone gives it credit for. That it is, that play is absolutely a part of our learning, our healing, our well-being, that it's the way that we problem solve as kids and craft identity, and that it is really easy, at least for me and my experience in the United States growing up, it's one of those things that we can very easily lose sight of in the process of becoming an adult and or have taken away by circumstances. And so I can feel that too. I can feel the moments when I can internally say, I don't feel like playing, or have this, like, you know, cloud or whatever, where the world gets a little too tough, and there's something about that moment of, like, wishing for and hoping for somebody, yeah, to reach out with an invitation to play. And so I think learning about how to become the person I wish I had all of the time. Like, it is just an unending, ever unfolding way of life that I am just really, really grateful for every time I get the opportunity to engage with people like Saida and Naomi. We were together last week, which was just wonderful. And on top of that, like, that I don't see these clowns unless it's on a trip in the field, and how much I learn from the local community in the way of resilience and art making and expression over and over again. Human resiliency is done through art, and it's all over the world in every corner.
Awesome. And Saida, what have you learned?
I keep learning that resilience is accessible no matter what we're experiencing. And so it's a hope. It really, yeah, at the core of this work is remembering our humanity and that resilience is to be found in a moment of crisis. So that's what I'm learning.
Fantastic. We definitely need hope now. Yes. And Naomi, what have you learned?
Oh, I will also echo and say resilience. I think about these performing in Lesbos, Greece, on the beaches, and we were performing, and there were half-inflated rubber rafts, the lifeboats, and this one little girl started to play on them, and we added into this show this moment of using the boat as a trampoline, and it was such an amazing moment of resilience and transformation that something that could be such a symbol and experience of danger can also then be reclaimed for a moment of discovery and play and moving forward.
Fantastic. And listeners, if you want to run off and join the clowns, or if you want to fund joy in the world, go to clownswithoutborders.org. That's all the time we have. Naomi Schaefer, Aaron Kreitz, and Saida Troillo, thank you so much for being with us today and for all your work bringing joy to the world.
Thank you.
Thank you.